Good morning, everyone. This is Joe Cristiano, and welcome to Liberty Talk Radio, your independent streaming internet radio station and libertarian voice, broadcasting 24 hours a day, 7 days a week from our studio in Tulsa, Oklahoma, to around the world. This broadcast is being brought to you on Sunday, March 25th. It's around 7:30 a.m. Central Time in the good old United States. Folks, this station is your antidote to popular talk radio, where you are expected to do more than just listen. You are expected to think. Although we broadcast from the United States, libertarian principles of individual freedom and responsibility are universal and apply to your area of residence, be it New York, Bangkok, Rio de Janeiro, Berlin, or Stalingrad. It's time for us to take back control of our government now, before this bureaucratic, oversized, and self-serving federal government starves us of our property, our freedom, our rights, and our liberty. To do this, we must shed conventional thinking regarding our political structure. We need to be revolutionaries in thought, dissidents in action. Only after we recognize what our government is doing to our freedom and our Constitution will we start taking it back. And this program is just about that. Well, good morning, everyone. During our live broadcast, you can call into area code 646-652-4620, and we'll take your comments on the air. At any other time, you may call area code 903-551-2186 to leave a voice message. Of course, you can send us email at any time to comments@libertytalkradio.com, and we'll try to respond to your questions or comments during our next broadcast. Well, good morning, everyone. This is an unusual broadcast. This is the very first time we're broadcasting live on a Sunday morning. I don't expect many people to be listening in because probably many people don't know we're on the air right now. We typically broadcast on Sunday evening, where we have, again, typically a guest that we interview. In fact, next Sunday evening, we're having George Phillies, who's a strong contender for the nomination for presidency for the Libertarian Party, you know, President of the United States, not the Libertarian Party itself, I'm sorry. And we'll be interviewing him on Sunday, April 8th. In fact, we were to interview him this evening, but schedules got on our end, I was unable to broadcast this evening. So here we are this morning. I have a real fast quip. You know, we've talked a lot about the immigration issue, and I do want to recommend a book very highly. I wish every one of my listeners would read this book because it cuts to the core of the problem. And no place else, absolutely no place else, are we talking about the core problem of the immigration issue. Now, I know you're going to say, I know the core problem is the federal government. And the answer to that is yes again. Here we have a book that outlines, it's a professor from the University of California, I think Santa Barbara, but I'm not certain which branch. His name is David Hansen, and he lives within the Hispanic community in Selma, California, which is all Hispanic now, and over 90% Hispanic. Most of his relatives are Hispanic or Hispanic Americans. Friends are Hispanics, illegal Hispanics, you name it. He understands where the problem is and why we did not have this problem 30 years ago, 40 years ago. We didn't have this problem. We still had a high influx of illegal aliens, and yet we didn't have the problems we had today, and he explains why. I am in 100% agreement with him. I didn't think I was going to be. I'm 100% agreement. And it has to do with our school system and the way we teach. Again, we're going back to the school systems, you know, and the way the state schools are promulgating the way we treat people, you know, with diversity training and giving them courses and whatever, romanticizing the place that their parents escaped from. Risk their lives to come here. They romanticize the place that they came from, and they vilify America at the same time. And now you have children of illegal aliens who are now citizens of the United States, who are hanging around malls without jobs, belong to gangs. And guess what? We have the same problem we have there as we have in any big city. When we have a large influx of young males without jobs and without education, without direction. Even the illegal aliens who are having these children are perplexed as to why they are turning out this way. He outlines it. Again, the book is Mexifornia. The book is Mexifornia by David Hansen. And I recommend it highly. Run to your library. Run to your bookstore and get that book. Okay. And here's a very interesting... We're going to talk about money and politics in a minute. But here's a very, very interesting email that I received. It says, Colorado to use inmates to fill migrant shortage. The reason for this program, it states, is started is to make sure the agricultural industry won't go out of business. Now, I heard, I'm going to put that aside for a second, I heard of an interview, a very short portion of an interview of Barack Obama yesterday. And the question was the immigration issue. And he talked about how we needed to control the immigration issue, how we needed to monitor it much closer, and we can do so very effectively from the employer end and make certain that employers pay the price when they hire illegal aliens. Now, ladies and gentlemen, I'm not for people breaking the law. Don't get me wrong. But there is a problem with the entire system. This stuff is all smoke to keep us busy thinking about something else other than those things, those real problems that we have. For example, our money supply, which we're going to get into. You know, things that affect us daily, affect us directly, that we should not spend any time thinking about. I don't care about things that don't affect me, but I care about things that do affect me, and I don't like the diversion. And this is a diversion. Here we have someone telling us we need to punish the employers for hiring illegal aliens because they cannot find anyone else to do the work. They cannot find. If there were no illegal aliens, if he was 100% successful, that's Obama was 100% successful in returning all the illegal aliens to Mexico, this economy would collapse. You couldn't buy any fruit, any vegetables. Trucks would stop rolling. I mean, we have to look at the consequences of what we are saying, and we have to look at the core problem. We're not hiring illegal aliens because we like to. We're hiring illegal aliens because they are willing to work and we need the labor. He is not talking to the problem at all. And I'm not going to get to the immigration issue because I can talk about that for months. And the problem is not the individual employers, because they're just hiring people who are basically over quota. Okay, look at it that way. The quota is very small. I think it's a couple of hundred thousand that we have coming in, or 58,000 or 86,000. I just forgot the number, but it's a very small number. But we need a couple of million. So everybody over that quota is an illegal alien. Instead of making illegal, why don't we just say over quota guests that come in here to work? You know, and then once they're in here, the government has programs which exasperate the situation, and I won't go into that, and then make things worse. And here we have a man with more who wants to be president, who's going to have more government programs that can make things worse. I have very little hope for this country if we continue to vote for people who have no concern for the consequences of their actions. They get in office, and then you and I can suffer. Excuse me, you and I can suffer the consequences of their decisions that always sound good. And if I sound angry, I'm not angry. I am damn mad. Damn mad, okay? I'll end it there. Now, I want to talk a little bit about money and politics. To be sure, nothing happens at all in Washington by accident. That's an axiom in Washington. Go there and ask any politician. Nothing happens by accident. It may appear to happen by accident. To us, they may want it to appear as accident to us. Now, I'm not talking about all the people. I'm talking about those people who actually run the government. And those people who actually run the government are not actually those people who we elect in office. I mean, those are people we elect in office, and yes, they can pull the lever, yes or no, they can make changes, but they don't. And you ever wonder why they don't? You ever hear that expression, write your congressman and tell him he's doing the wrong thing? Well, he's pulling the lever because that's the only lever he can pull. Because if he didn't, he would be in trouble in one way, shape, or form, or not get reelected. He's not playing ball game. That means nothing gets done that he wants done, or things that should get done, so he has to play ball. Everyone is bought into the system. Somebody else is telling them which levers to pull. And now very, very few, like Ron Paul, who are outcasts, right? They get absolutely no respect whatsoever in Washington because he is one of those that for the most part, and everything I've heard him talk about, he speaks the truth. In fact, he would be a perfect talk show host for Liberty Talk Radio. He is a libertarian, philosophically a libertarian, but he is a Republican. He is a libertarian Republican, and I guess that's what I am. I'm a libertarian Republican. I'm like Ron Paul. I don't know where he stands on all issues, but so far I'm in concert with him 100%. Now, this man can't get anything through because he doesn't pull the levers the way they want him to. And he's the exception. Now, the only time things get done is that when there is there's a profit motive somewhere. Politics is synonymous with power and money. Now, we know that. We just don't like to admit it to ourselves. Politics equals power and money. Now, if you go back 100 years and if you heard the Rothschild family speaking, who controlled all of the money basically in Europe, the flow of money and the monies that went, the loans to the major countries, you would hear him say something like this: you can keep your armies, you can keep your governments, you can keep your politicians, you can even keep your industries, and you can keep your people. Just give me control of the money supply. Willie Sutton said the same thing when he was finally captured after robbing bank after bank after bank successfully. And the police officer asked him, said, "Willie, why do you rob banks?" And he looked at the police officer totally perplexed and responded, "Well, that's where the money is." Folks, we have to understand the politicians today, the senior politicians, those that have been there for a long period of time, not the newbies coming in who want to make changes, and it doesn't apply to all of them, but applies to the system. And the system is driven by the old hack politicians. Those are the ones that are being told to pull the levers, and they are very obedient. Understand that. And I don't care if you're Republican or Democrat. It makes absolutely no difference. You see, if you ask them honestly, why did you vote that way? If they were honest, like Willie Sutton was honest, they'd say, because that's where the money is. Now, how do the politicians manipulate the money indirectly so that you and I pay for everything without being taxed? Now, that's a trick, isn't it? That means they're going to convince you to pay for all these boondoggles, pay for all the wars that are started because... why are they started, ladies and gentlemen? What did I just tell you? Because you've got to follow the money, because there's money in wars. Someone asked me the other day, isn't it a shame that the veterans' hospitals can't get the money they need to treat our wounded soldiers properly. And I said, no, it's not a shame. And they were shocked. And oh, don't get me wrong, I am 100% with the soldiers, 100%. I said, no, I said, it's not a shame. It's planned that way. And they say, how could you say something so cruel? I said, you don't seem to understand. In Washington, there is no money and there's no power to be gained, which begets more money via a sick soldier. In fact, if you look at the system and the way it works, we don't care. Washington does not care. Politics does not care at all about soldiers who come back who can't work. They cannot provide the money machine with any more power or any generation of more money. So they let them die. They give them the minimum amount, and then they have congressional investigations, and it looks like everyone is so concerned that, oh, General so-and-so just made a mistake and didn't get the appropriations in time, and they did this. You know, this is all smoke and mirrors for you and me. The fact is there's no money in wounded soldiers, so to hell with them. That's the program. Now, I don't think we should have wounded soldiers in the first place. We shouldn't have them coming here in the first place. But there's no money in a wounded soldier. So to hell with him. Or to hell with her. That's the system. That's not the system that I like to see. That I concur with. I disagree with everything. I'm just telling you this is the way it is. It's painful to think that way. It's painful to think, oh, our government wouldn't do that. No, our government would do that and does do that and will continue to do that. Ladies and gentlemen, please do me a favor. Anytime you see a decision, follow the money and see where it goes. Right? Now, the value of the dollar. And next Thursday, I want to talk about the gold standard. We only have about another 10 minutes, and I'm going to talk a little bit about how we wind up paying for all of the political, and when I say political, I mean the money people behind the politicians, how the U.S. citizen winds up paying for all of these programs without being taxed. All right, now here it goes. If you ever wonder where your money comes from, it's really very simple. In fact, it's very complicated. I mean, if you look at the flow chart of how money goes from one point to another, till it eventually gets to the banks and how it's lent out and how it's that loan is used as an asset. And I won't get into that now. It's very interesting, but and I really had a lot of difficulty understanding it. And I finally had it broken down for me, and I started to really think about it and logically follow the money, and it started to make sense. And then I said, geez, that's so simple once you understand it. I'm just going to tell you phase one. I'm going to go from phase one all the way to like phase seven or eight, which is the money that comes from the bank. I'll leave everything in between is immaterial. It's just a matter of certificates being drafted and book entries with the Federal Reserve Bank, going to the Federal Reserve, going to the Federal Reserve Banks, going to the banks and stuff like that. And that's all bookkeeping errors, entries until it arrives to us. All right. This is where it starts, and this is all you need to know. When the government wants more money to do what it wants to do, the war in Iraq, beef up military against Iran, whatever the case may be, more boondoggles, all it does is print more money. And the way it does that, it makes a very, very pretty certificate called a treasury note, right? And that is the asset, right? I mean, that's the liability, is the treasury note. The asset is the actual printing of the dollar bills. Just look at it that way, right? So now we have a debt, let's say for $100 million, right? and we print. All right, so we print the certificates, a $100 million treasury note, and then we print $100 million. I'm oversimplifying this, but this is exactly what happens. And they print $100 million, right? And then we sell this $100 million, you know, as bonds, you know, treasury bonds, and people buy them and they get a little interest on it, right? Now, so really, where our money comes from, it comes from debt. It doesn't come from nothing. It comes from less than nothing. It comes from debt. It would be better if they just printed it and put it out. But they can't do that because you need double booking, entry bookkeeping. You got to show a negative, a debit, and a credit. If you just printed it, you'd have a debit. You wouldn't have any credit. All right. So this comes down. Now, what happens here is the government, when it does that, it inflates the money supply. So instead of there being, and let me simplify this and use very, very small terms. Let's assume there's $100 outstanding in the United States, right? And the government, right, and everybody, there's a $100 and there's 100 people in the United States. And each person has a dollar, right? And that dollar on that day is worth, on a relative sense, $1. Now the government the next day prints another $100 and puts it into circulation and uses that to wage a war. Well, now there's $200 in circulation. On a relative sense, what is your dollar worth? Well, 50 cents, because there's twice as many dollars outstanding. And this is what the government does, but it doesn't do it, doesn't increase the money supply by 50%. It's like putting the frog in lukewarm water and then turning up the heat very slowly. Eventually, the frog gets cooked because he doesn't know he's being boiled to death because it happens very slowly. You know, the old frog in the warm water bit. Right? And this is exactly what happens to us. So the government does something that cost $100 million today. They know they're going to have to pay it within the next 10 years or so. And they inflate the money supply 3 or 4% every year. So at the end of 10 years, 40% of that has already been taken care of, right, through inflation, right? Because they've inflated it, so they really owe now only, instead of $100 million, $60 million, and then they refinance that all over again, you know, and they increase the money supply again. And the way they do that, now, so our dollar, our wallet, instead of being worth a dollar on a relative sense, it's not worth the dollar it was worth in 1945, it's only worth like 6 cents or something. But what it does is that next year, it's only worth 97 cents. Now, people say, oh, no, inflation is caused by high prices. No, no, higher prices is a result of inflation. It's a result of inflation. It doesn't cause the inflation. The only way that you can inflate money is if you put more in there. You got to inflate the money supply. You can't inflate the money supply by having higher prices. And let me give you an example. Let's assume there are just three people in the world, okay, and there's money being pumped out. And person number one has $50 and person number two has $50, right? And let me do it this way. There's one person who has the money. They have two things to buy, right? They have $50 and the both things that they want to buy, the two things they want to buy cost $25 each. So he goes to person A, says, here's 25. Give me, you know, let me buy this. And he buys it. Now it goes to person B. Here's 25, buys it. It's even. He had $50, he bought two $25 items, right? Now, let's assume for a second the same amount of money is outstanding, $50. Now, person A sells it for $25. Person B says, sorry, it's now $30. What happens? Think about it. Guy says, well, you know, that's great. I only have 25. I know there's credit cards, but let's forget about that for a second because that muddies the water, but the principles, it still holds true. So the person says, well, I only have 25. Guy says, well, sorry, 30. Guy, he has to walk away. He has to walk away. So he walks away. Now, the person has how much money in his pocket? $25. He bought one thing from person A, from supplier A for 25. Supplier B has something on his books valued at $30 that no one wants. Where's the inflation? There is none. That person B has to sell that. In order to sell that, what does he need to do? He needs to drop the price to $25. Now, the person could be a real stick in the mud and say, well, for making me come back and forth, I'm not going to give you $25. I'm only going to give you $22.50 because of my time. A person can do that. So now the person buys it. The guy says, I got to get rid of this thing because I have to buy some more supplies and I have no money. So he buys it for $22.50. Now the person has $2.50 in his pocket, right? And that person doesn't have that. That person can now replenish his supply. You see, it all equals out. So you have $22.50, $2.50, and $25. You have $50. No inflation. In fact, in this case, the prices went down. Inflation is not a result of unions or people demanding more money or companies raising the price. I mean, they can raise the price. Let's assume supplier B says, no, I want $300 for this item. And the person has $25. He says, it's fine. You can ask $5,000. I don't care. I can't buy it. If it's $25.01, I cannot buy it. He's forced to sell it for $25 again. Now, the problem is that the government continues to inflate the money supply. It's not raising prices. They lead us to believe it's higher prices. Higher prices could never cause inflation because once you put more money in one place, you've got to take it from another if you're not inflating the money supply. Now, let's take that same example. And now the person, they inflate the money supply. And the person has $110, right? So the other guy, the supplier A says, hey, I wonder if I can get $30 from this guy, you know? You want this thing? It's $30. Guy says, well, I mean, I'm sorry, not 100. He has $60, I'm sorry, wrong math. He has $60 now. So the first guy says, yeah, I want $30 for it. The guy says, well, I have $30. He gives it to him. The next guy, $30, he gives it, right? So what? The same goods are exchanged, right? But not the same amount of money because it's been inflated by 10%. So everyone pays 10% more. It is inflating them. So inflation is caused by the Federal Reserve asking for more money to go into the system. The Federal Reserve is run by the major banking institutions that supply all the money. These are the ones that make the decisions in the World Bank, the IMF, who have hundreds of billions of dollars lent out to countries, and they're interested in their interest payments. They don't care who suffers. And the money people, which are the people behind politics, have allegiance to absolutely no country whatsoever. No allegiance. Zero allegiance. They have allegiance to money only. Only to money. So when people say, oh, write your congressman, that's a dumb thing to do. What a waste. Don't waste your time. You think your congressman doesn't know what to do? They know what to do. They know a lot better than we do. They also know what they can and cannot do. And you're writing a letter is not going to change anything. Now, if enough people write in, they may not support a particular bill. And you'll say, gee, Joe, so you're wrong. It worked. No, I'm not wrong. What they'll do is they'll just tack it on to another bill that you don't see and it'll get in anyway. Or they'll change it around and make it worse. Don't worry, you're going to get it up to kazoo no matter which way you look at it. Because if the money people want it done, it gets done. Now, the only way to do away with this entire system of inflating the money supply is to have a standard. And that is the gold standard, or silver standard, or copper standard, whatever. A standard of weights and measures as required by the Constitution. Our money system is unconstitutional as well as erroneous and fiat. Okay? And we will suffer from it someday. There was a guy who said about 35 years ago, I don't remember his name, it was about 35 years ago, he said in the crash of, in the depression during the 1930s, money was king because it was backed by gold and silver. He said in the next monetary crisis, money will be worthless. He is absolutely right. He was absolutely right because that's exactly what's happening. On our next broadcast on Thursday, I'm going to talk about why we need a standard and how money originally originated and how we can get rid of the inflation and how, by having a weights and measure system, you can avoid war. Sounds interesting, doesn't it? Let's see. Where are we? Oh, I think I just lost something. Okay. It is now Well, we've been on the air for about 30 minutes now, and just hold on one second. Okay. I just spilled my coffee all over my computer stuff. All righty, here we go. Okay. And we're going to end this broadcast. I'll see you Thursday morning at 6:30 a.m. This is the end of today's broadcast. We'd like to thank Ranch Acres Audiology for their financial support, and we'd like to thank you for listening in. You can further the cause of liberty by recommending this program to your friends, and let us hear from you. Our email address is comments@libertytalkradio.com, or phone in your questions to area code 903-551-2186. Remember, you are either allowing your liberties to be taken away, or you are striving to protect them. Unfortunately, there is no middle ground. Until next time, stay well and stay tuned.